Hi, everybody. It's Tony Giuliano, host of the No Code Podcast. I'm very excited to drop episode 3 of season 2 with my good friend, Ben Eachus. Ben is the co-founder and CEO of Flowspace, a technology company that specializes in third-party logistics and on-demand warehouse space. More importantly, he's an awesome husband, father, and friend. Flowspace was named one of the most innovative companies of the year 2000 by Fast Company, and they've raised tens of millions of dollars in funding and have grown to over 70 employees. Ben left the Honest Company back in 2017 to strike out on his own and create a digital marketplace to marry up warehouse owners with occupiers that needed temporary space in a hurry. Flowspace has expanded to include many other 3PL services, and Ben's big bet seems to be paying off. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to season 2, episode 3 of the No Code Podcast. We are turning and burning here, just going crazy week by week episodes here. Really excited to get this one going today. My guest is somebody I've known for a long time, all the way back into probably 97 or so. Mr. Ben Eachus, the CEO of Flowspace. Ben, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Tony. It's been a while.
It has been. It has. And certainly there's been a lot going on for you in your wild world of being, I mean, really, it comes down to being a tech CEO, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to think the last time that we had seen each other, and I think it might have been when I visited you at Villanova to go see like a Fuel concert or something.
Yeah, it probably was. I actually remember that. Fuel played at the Connolly Center at Villanova, just going the post-grunge just titans that were Fuel.
You know? Exactly. And then I saw you in Pennsylvania a couple years ago. But good to reconnect.
Yeah, definitely. And that wasn't the first time I saw Fuel. I also saw them at the Ocean City Music Pier. I don't know if you came with us to that one or not. That was I think that was senior year of high school. And yeah, that was a wild one. Yeah.
Nice.
Gravesy had a good night out that night. Our buddy Chris Graves, he had a fun one. But yeah, man, it's awesome to have you on and to be able to talk to you today because, you know, you mentioned we reconnected back, I think it was probably 3-4 years ago where we grabbed dinner one night. I think you were up in the Lehigh Valley, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we were in Brenningsville in the Lehigh Valley, and you had come from a meeting. We met for dinner there just to talk about Flowspace before I really took the plunge and started the company.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't even remember how I heard about you launching this company, but one thing I do know is it definitely intersected with what I do at JLL in terms of, you know, the industrial warehouse space and your company really, you know, essentially solving a problem in that space that was, you know, not easily addressed prior to you guys creating your company and probably a couple other competitors that do something similar.
Yeah, exactly. And what we initially started to do was help companies find short-term warehouse space. And the reason I started the company was really born out of some of the frustrations I had when scaling different fulfillment networks and supply chains for e-commerce companies. And there's really no way to find short-term or temporary space. And that was the initial idea behind Flowspace. It actually looked very similar to Airbnb, where you find a warehouse that had empty space, you click on it, contact the warehouse operator. And we've really evolved over the last 3 years. And I know we're going to get to what we're working on now, but that was the initial start. And I think when I was thinking of starting the company, of course, you're always looking for other people to kind of validate, hey, is this a real thing? And, you know, I reached out to you because you had been at JLL, and I think you were one of the other people who got back to me. It's like, hey, let's talk about this thing.
Yeah, so I remember when you did reach out, I had talked to one of our brokers in our South Jersey office, and he was an industrial broker, and I kind of described to him what you were talking about. And, you know, he had mentioned that he had a client that was very seasonal. And, you know, one of their major problems was, you know, during the holiday season, they needed so much more space than they might in, you know, say March, when there's not much going on in terms of holidays. And I kind of bounced it off him, and he was like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I could, you know, sometimes his client would ask him to do like, hey, I need, you know, 10,000 square feet for 3 months. And, you know, not to get too deep into it, but if you're in the commercial real estate brokerage world, that is not a fun assignment. It's going to take a long time and your fee is going to be very pathetic. And it's not really going to be an enjoyable thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my experience. So prior to starting the company, I was at the Honest Company and was in charge of figuring out how much warehouse space they needed and scaling that network. And, you know, I think the challenge is precisely what you said. You know, when you need warehouse space, but you're not ready to sign that 5-year lease, there's really no one to call because, as right. you mentioned, Tony, you and your peers are not that interested in that type of business. So you're pretty much going around knocking on doors to see who has empty space. And the initial idea behind the company was, how do we put that online? How do we make it easier? And then, you know, over the last 4 years, we've built one of the biggest warehouse networks in the country. And really our focus is e-commerce fulfillment now, but that's very much how we started.
Yeah. Yeah. So take us back to kind of the inception of the idea, you know, while you're at the Honest Company, I believe is when it happened. And just kind of run through that in terms of like how you identified the problem and then how you kind of took the next steps from making it, you know, not just a problem you saw, but something you felt you could solve by actually, you know, launching an entirely new company on your own, which must have been terrifying and exciting at the same time.
Yeah. You know, prior to starting at the Honest Company, I'd worked at a company called McMaster Car, which is, it's like one of those multi-billion-dollar companies no one's ever heard of until they've ordered from there. And they specialize in same-day delivery of industrial products. And they have this operations management program. You essentially rotate into different areas of the company. And one of the areas I was in was the warehousing and fulfillment center. And so that was like my first exposure and understanding what an efficient operation looked like. And then I left because I'd taken a class in business school, and the professor said, the people who are most likely to start a company have worked at companies under 100 people. And
right.
he cited some study like that and later figured out why that is. But we went to the Honest Company, very much a startup. It was growing just tremendously every single month. And my role there was really to figure out which software we should use in our warehouse facilities, plan how much space we need, whether we should outsource it, where these warehouses need to go. And I guess became just increasingly frustrated with, one, the software solutions that were out on the market, which are actually difficult to run a facility. And then the second problem was precisely what I described. Like, I think there was one instance, where essentially there was like 8 trailers of diapers, because the Honest Company sells diapers.
Yeah.
They were arriving at the warehouse and I literally had no place to put them. Right? Like the warehouse was just packed to the gills, because when you're growing, you're buying inventory, you're buying in advance of that growth, so your warehouse can be really full. And I needed short-term warehouse space. I remember calling industrial brokers, and they're like, hey, this is really not my thing, man.
Yeah.
You ever find out it's because they're not making any money on it.
Right.
So ended up kind of walking door to door to see who had space. And it was kind of my aha moment where I'm like, this is crazy. This is 2016, 2017. Like, why isn't this online?
Right.
That was the initial idea behind the company.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like you mentioned. I think you mentioned Uber earlier. It's the whole excess capacity business model. It's like, how do we solve this problem of, you know, we have available services, they're out there, and the demand is there, but no one's getting kind of creative on the supply side, or just how to kind of bring it to market and educate people about it, you know. And it's really right there. It's just, how do you solve it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think your second part of the question is like, well, what led you to kind of quit your job and start? I think the first thing is, one, I think one of the reasons that I think that professor recommended you start at a company with less than 100 people is that a lot of processes, a lot of things are not dialed in yet. Right. So you see a lot of frustration and by and large, like most companies are probably experiencing those same frustrations, right? Whereas at a bigger company, there's a department for everything. There's an approval process. Everything is kind of figured out. A smaller company, that's not the case. Right? So you see all these opportunities. And you know, I had this experience. And then my next question was, well, are there others like me, right? Like, and that was probably around the time I reached out to you to see, hey, am I just imagining things, or do people actually need something like this?
Yeah.
You know, I had a couple conversations like that. We built, you know, I knew my partner for the last 15 years. He's a good friend of mine. He built the first iteration of the website. And then actually my wife at the time,
your wife at the time and presently.
Yes, exactly.
Very good. Very good. Yes.
At the time, my wife was thinking of leaving her job, and she did. And we thought, okay, what's the first thing that we need to prove about this business? And the first thing is, like, are there warehouses that are even willing to sign up for this thing? So she actually took the plunge first, and she left her job and ended up handing out flyers to all these warehouses in the Inland Empire, which is like an hour outside of Los Angeles. And they're literally flyers, you know, like paper flyers. She even had business cards printed up, which we later found like had a typo. So she's going out with all these things. She's also pregnant at the time, going out like signing up all these warehouses for basically a site that didn't even really exist at that point.
Right.
I think what was clear is that warehouse operators were really interested in what we were talking about. And that kind of gave us enough confidence to take the next step. And then, you know, it's kind of just baby steps along the way.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, and I kind of, my memory's getting refreshed here on the story, because one thing I was going to ask you was, you know, when you made the jump, you know, you're married at the time. Did you guys have a child yet or not? I don't remember.
Yeah, my wife was pregnant.
Oh, she was pregnant. You just mentioned, yeah, she was pregnant. So I was going to ask you, you know, what the impact was on the family, but she was right there in it. I forgot that she was, you know, super involved with it. So clearly, you know, you guys are jumping in this together, which is probably a great way to do it, versus like, you know, one person making a change while the other one's kind of sticking with what they're doing or trying to hold the fort down at home. If you're both kind of invested in it, I assume that that's kind of, you know, you're right there with one another, supporting one another.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it depends on how you define risk, right? And having worked at a bigger company, you know, there's still risk involved with that. Like, the company's not going anywhere, but your position is, or your place at that company is always in jeopardy, right? So there's a sure thing by staying at a bigger company. And in many ways, that's not always the least risky endeavor, right? And so that was kind of like the framework. And then, you know, when we were thinking about doing this, we kind of made a list of 10 things that we needed to do before taking the plunge. One of them was making money through Airbnb. So like renting out a room in our condo to basically anyone who would take it. We kind of build up some capital.
But right.
Just like kind of crossing these things off the list. We eventually stopped. We actually had a really good experience on Airbnb. Like, we had, you check out our reviews, they're great. But
nice.
We stopped when people, there are a few people who like misunderstood that we were staying in the home as well. So there's an incident where there's a family, I think they were from Sweden, and, you know, they arrived and they're like, what's your dog doing here? Is he going to stay here the whole time? Like,
he lives here. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it became super awkward. Like, my wife and I are sitting on the couch, they're eating at the dining room table. Clearly, there's some misunderstanding that they thought we'd be gone. But
that's pretty funny. I mean, yeah, that's I would imagine that being an Airbnb host is, especially when you're staying there, there were probably a few of those awkward moments.
For sure.
I know. We had to do an Airbnb for an entire month this past summer. We were renovating our house, and you know, it was supposed to kick off pre-COVID, and we were supposed to stay in the house the whole time while they're doing the renovations. Well, you know, when I'm stuck working from home every day, as I was in the, you know, kind of the beginning of the pandemic, I'm like, I can't be here when these guys are knocking down walls and changing plumbing, and it's super loud and the dog's going crazy. So in short order, we had to get to an Airbnb. And it was not a good experience. We were just stuck though. There was nothing we could do. I mean, we showed up the first day and they did a great job with the pictures online, and we walked in and we're like, oh, this is garbage.
Well, I mean, yeah, everyone has a unique experience, and you know, for the most part, it was actually pretty cool. You got to meet a lot of people. Yeah. I think after a while, we were just like, whoa, it's a lot to have people in the house every night.
Yeah.
So anyway, we saved kind of some money by doing that. And then, you know, the goal was like, all right, how do we take the next step? Because like, you get overwhelmed if you're just thinking about all of the things that you need to do. You just kind of need to think, all right, what am I going to do this week that's going to check that thing off the box and get me closer to doing this? And, you know, I think we were fortunate that, you know, we had this, I wouldn't even call it like a working product at the time. It was a prototype. It was like a homepage. Mm-hmm. Sarah had signed up a bunch of these warehouse operators. And then we were fortunate enough to get to interview with this accelerator called Y Combinator, which is like a pretty famous accelerator in Silicon Valley. And what they do essentially is they make a bunch of small investments into really early stage companies and then hope that, you know, they grow over time and become these really successful companies. And they're famous for making investments in companies like Airbnb and Dropbox and Instacart. So they're really well known. And we had an interview there, and you know, the likelihood of getting in is really low. You know, you make a video, you have a whole application process, and we somehow got in. And as part of that, at the time, like, you have to move to San Jose. Or not, you don't have to move to San Jose. The thing's in Silicon Valley. So you have to move to the Bay,
right,
basically.
Right.
And my wife is 6 months pregnant at the time. We get notice that we get into this program. And at the end of the program, there's this thing called Demo Day, which is essentially you, for 3 months, you're there, you're working every day on your company, you know, you're getting feedback from the mentors there. And then on Demo Day, you present to all of these investors. It's like 700 people in a room, and it's
wow.
It's the reason you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we get the due date of our son, and it's like the day after Demo Day. So, anyway.
Oh my gosh.
My wife, who was very understanding. So I ended up moving with my business partner. We moved into this apartment in San Jose for 3 months. My wife stayed in Southern California. And that was kind of the summer. I mean, it was unorthodox living apart for that long, but you know, we were fortunate enough to get just a lot done in that 3 month period that we were up there.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, for that to line up that way. And, you know, what you're describing sounds like an episode of Silicon Valley, by the way.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're a fan of that show. I forget if it was HBO or Showtime or whatever it was, but I love that show. But it sounds like the whole, you know, incubator, Silicon Valley, big tech, you know, all these venture capitalists out there funding these new firms. And I got it. Was it anything like that? I mean, that show's crazy and ridiculous and just, you know, wacky scenarios, but was it anything like the pressure that they displayed in terms of, you know, are we going to get funded? How are we going to get funded? Are we going to get screwed in this somehow, you know, by some opportunistic firm that comes in and before we knew it, you know, because we were naive and we'd never done this before, we get taken advantage of? Was there any of that, at least that feeling that could happen?
I think the pressure is real. I think the pressure, though, is more self-imposed, because when you're starting the company, no one cares about your company except you, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're kind of just toiling in obscurity. And, you know, my partner and I, we moved up there, and I remember our first day at Y Combinator, you know, we told, you're assigned a mentor who are just amazing. They've been there, done that. They can tell you kind of everything to do and what not to do. And we present this like really grand vision of everything that we're going to build and like what the company's going to be. And, you know, like, we're going to be this distributed fulfillment network. We're going to be the biggest fulfillment network in the country. And then he sees our presentation and he just looks at us and he's like, do you have a single customer? So,
no.
Like, look at each other with our kind of tail between our legs, and we're like, yeah, we should get on that. We should definitely get on. So really the first month that we were up there, so we're sitting in this apartment in San Jose that we'd rented. We were under the impression that it had air conditioning. So we had basically like closed all the windows, right? Because it was like 100 degrees out there. And I think we called the landlord. We're like, hey, your air conditioning isn't working. And he's like, yeah, there's no air conditioning in this place. I just remember like just sweating profusely and really just like waiting, you know, trying to find that first customer. And that I think was the most stressful thing, because you're then at that moment, you're like, what did I just do? I just quit my job. My wife is pregnant. My partner had a good job too. Like, what am I doing right now? And you're just thinking of any way just to get one single person to talk to you. And
right.
So that went on for like 6 weeks. And, you know, every week you go into Y Combinator and you have to like give them an update on how the business is doing. So, you know, every week it was the same. Do you have a customer? Nope. Do you have a customer? Nope. And finally, I'll never forget this. On the 4th of July, someone called our number. And like, I picked it up on the first ring. It was, and the guy's like, oh my gosh, I'm surprised someone answered the phone. And I'm like, yeah, well, we're 24/7 operation over here, Phil.
Hey, we're used to this all the time. The phone never stops ringing here.
Yeah, exactly. And he described what he needed. And, you know, at the time, something was going on with like the tariffs, and he needed to move product, like move inventory, which I think was furniture, over and store it in Oakland somewhere. And he described what he needed. I'm like, okay, well, let me get right back to you. We'll handle this. And I'm like, can you meet in an hour? And he's like, yeah, I can meet in an hour. So I drove out to meet him at this warehouse to like show him what it would look like. And he's like, all right, let's do it. You're my only option. I need to get this done by tomorrow. And I was like, all right, cool. And he's like, well, how do I pay you? And I'm like, well, you could just give me your credit card number. You could like write your credit card number on a piece of paper. And he's like, there's no way I'm, there's no way. So then I went back to our apartment and, you know, I told my partner, I'm like, hey, we really need to figure out a way to collect a payment on our website. And he stayed up all night, like coding that and making it so that someone could actually collect a payment. And then I called the guy, like, hey, just go to this link, input everything. And it, you know, to him, it appeared like very, you know, it was fine. But that was, and then, you know, then, and it just kind of builds on itself. You get that confidence and you get, you know, a couple more customers and a couple more customers. And, you know, it just kind of builds on itself. And then the customers kind of tell you what they need in the product and what's not working, what is working. And it's a really humbling experience, because what you thought you should build isn't necessarily what people want.
You have to adapt it, I imagine, as you go. And once you kind of understand your customer and what they need and what they want, I imagine you're kind of tweaking it as you go to kind of to satisfy them and retain them and grow the business. But one question I had about, so when you met that first customer, did you have the space already locked up, like on your marketplace that you could provide him day one? Because you mentioned you're hunting for customers, and I'm curious, like, on which side of the business? I mean, he's the paying customer, is the occupier, the guy that needs the space, but who is on the other side of that transaction?
We were lucky that we had, like, a lot of my time spent up there, I was, like, going out to warehouses and I formed a relationship with someone who just happened to have space in precisely this market. So it was actually, we're fortunate that we had it. And we didn't have to go out and like find warehouse space, which like in the beginning of building this business, it's always kind of this chicken or the egg. And the way that we did it was we signed up a bunch of warehouse operators who were interested in the product. And then as we had customers who wanted to store their inventory and ship their inventory from around the country, It was a more seamless process, but trial by fire. But fortunately, we had a partner there who was ready to go.
That's hilarious that you had him. You were going to ask him to write his credit card information down on a piece of paper. That's just amazing. Oh, I love that. So that's, that's kind of the initial business model is digital marketplace, solving short-term problems for people that need warehouse space. But then as you started to mention in the beginning, you guys have evolved into something more comprehensive than that, really in what we call the 3PL space, third party logistics.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's all anyone is talking about today, and with good reason. Having gone through almost a year of this pandemic now, it's something that is needed. It's a tremendous, tremendous need for all kinds of companies at this point. So talk about how that evolved over, I guess, the first couple years of Flow Space.
Yeah, I think there's one thing that, that the first year of the business that we did, I think, really well at was cultivating relationships and building out a supply network. So warehouse operators that wanted to join the platform. And when we kind of took a step back and looked at what we had done is we had about 200 warehouse operators that were running our software, shipping products for or storing products for us on a daily basis. And I think one of the things that is important and that is really made important mainly by Amazon is that in order to enable two-day delivery or even faster delivery than that, you just need more warehouse locations, right? You need to store your products close to where the customer is ultimately ordering them from. And there's kind of this realization that, we've built this network of warehouses. They're all running the same software. So that could we offer that up to a brand that just wanted to integrate with Flow Space and now all of a sudden be able to store and ship their products from anywhere? And that was really kind of the aha moment for us. And then once, then we continued to develop our software to continue to make it very easy to enable direct-to-consumer fulfillment or e-commerce. And we've done that over the last, I would say, 18 to 24 months. So that was very much what we've built out. And really our goal now is to enable these brands to have distributed inventory to launch really quickly without the overhead capex of signing a lease. They can outsource all their fulfillment. And for the warehouse operators, our goal is to give them the power that they need to kind of develop more business, right? E-commerce fulfillment is actually a really profitable business for many logistics companies. But without the right software, you're not always able to realize those benefits.
Right. Yeah, no, that's very true. And so in the business that I'm in, JLL, and there's, it's a huge company. We do a million different things within commercial real estate. But, some of what we're talking about today initially was probably viewed as a threat to the conventional, brokerage business of, like you said, signing long-term leases. We want our clients to sign, 10, 15-year leases, and, that gets us a great fee. And, it's fun to work on those deals. And, it's kind of what you're shooting for. But then, what you're talking about comes along. And then, companies like WeWork and other, co-working spaces come along. And, initial reaction again is like, oh my gosh, is this going to bust up the model of what we're talking about in JLL's business? But what I've found over the years is that it's a great resource to have, or an alternative to have, to make our clients happy, because there's still going to be the big deals out there. There's still plenty of companies that need a lot of space over a long period of time. But then there's other companies that come up and they need a faster solution. So, I view these as additional tools in the toolbox for larger companies to go then refer to and say, okay, we need, one of the examples I mentioned earlier is that we had an industrial broker with a seasonal company. He was still working on big deals with them, but they also needed the short-term stuff.
Right.
And hey, he could spend hours on end working on those short-term deals for very little fee. And he would do that. I mean, if it makes his client happy, he's going to do that. But if he's got an alternative and say, hey, listen, I'm going to refer you out on this one and we're going to get this done in a matter of days versus a matter of months trying to find shadow space out there that's not listed anywhere. Well, again, that makes the client happy. And in the time money equation for a broker, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yep. No, I agree 100% with that. And I think ultimately, you know, JLL, Flow Space, like our businesses live or die on whether our clients are happy, right? And
right.
You kind of need to give them the offering that they want, right? Like, and whether that's a lease or outsourced logistics, you know, the trends are undeniable in what's happening right now, right? The distributed inventory, the need for more warehouse space, that isn't going away. And there will always be companies that want to lease their own space, but many companies will also need to supplement that with the type of service that Flow Space can offer. So we very much see less competitive and more collaborative in the sense that this is ultimately where things are headed, right? So how do you achieve these goals for the customers?
Right, exactly. So, you know, you're going through this process of setting up the company and initial business model that evolves into something else. Are you still in the stage right now where things are changing rapidly, or do you feel like, you know, what is it, four years in now or
yeah,
so?
It's 4 years.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's settling in terms of like you have your legs under you and you know what your direction is? What, you know, where is it kind of in the evolutionary process in your mind?
I think the exciting thing is everything that we laid out about our like thesis or our hunch has proven like it's right. And I think my focus is, of course, you know, I think we've struck a nerve. Like there's a ton of opportunity to continue accelerating, doing what we're doing. That means, you know, my job as CEO is to constantly push us to improve, like, and expand our service offerings and things you can do on our platform. So very much we're in acceleration mode where it's just continue building, continue supporting our customers, have more customers join, you know, and we've been fortunate to be in a good space over the last couple of years. This overall industry is growing. You know, we've grown our team from, you know, my wife and my partner and I to, you know, we have 70 people at the company now. So,
oh, nice.
And yeah, we've been fortunate that some of our initial hypotheses are right. And now it's just a question of like moving with a lot of speed to start executing or continue to execute on these goals.
Yeah. I mean, your tag on LinkedIn says co-founder, CEO, Flow Space, parentheses, we're hiring. So
yeah,
right there, you're hiring.
There you go.
It's out there. Exactly. I could move to California. I might come work for you. I don't know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean, hey, you need a good ops guy. I'm on the next plane.
That's saying a lot these days that you're just willing to just hop into a plane.
Yeah, if anyone JLL is listening to this, I'm not going to do that. I promise. I'm just going to keep working and podcasting. And then, you know, Flow Space will be there in 5 years when, you know, you need to take the next step and then take it public. I'll be right there for you. Are you still at the point where, you know, you did all that initial fundraising and, you know, raising capital? Are you guys still raising capital with however much you're allowed to talk about that? I don't want you to, you know, spill any confidential secrets here, but are you still in that mode?
Yeah. I mean, you can read online, like what we've raised in the past. I think for us, like our goal has always been to build a sustainable and large business, right? And sometimes additional capital is necessary to do that. That's never our goal, right? Right. And that's often, I think, the trap that companies can fall into where, you know, you raise, you know, a large sum, like your customers don't really care about that, right? Like they want to know that you're still providing
yeah.
a service and you're living up to your expectations. So that's very much the mentality that we have here. It's just like, let's build a good company. There are levers that you can pull to kind of accelerate growth, but our focus is just continuing to kind of meet our customers' needs.
Well, I think that's a great approach too, because a lot of times you'll see companies that get, I guess, kind of, you know, lured into the the mindset of like, ooh, there's all this, you know, there's all this capital out there. There's all this ability to raise money. Let's go grab it. And then especially in the tech field, you know, you'll see companies that are not all that financially healthy, but, you know, they're good at raising capital. You know, they're good at raising money. And, but then you dive into their financials and it's like, wow, this, you know, this company's really not doing great, but you guys seem to have the approach of like growing at the pace that you feel is best for the overall health of the company, which I think is a great way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think you start a company for, and I've listened to your other podcasts with the other entrepreneurs and business owners on the show. You're not building a company just to like, for a couple of years, like you want this company to last a long time, right? Because you've put so much into it. So that's really our goal is like, how can we make this a great place for our customers, our warehouse partners, and then also our employees? Like, how do you build an environment where people enjoy coming to work or not coming to work, logging on to Zoom, whatever it is today, and can kind of advance their careers here? So that's our focus. And then I think if we do those things well, like good outcomes happen. But you can't fixate on things outside of that.
Yeah, when your people are happy and they're productive and they like coming to work and they're invested, I mean, that's when some really special things can happen, you know, and you really can't overlook that. And if you can foster that and allow that to grow over time, I mean, they can help propel you into heights you probably thought you couldn't even reach yourself if everybody's kind of in that same mindset, you know. And that's, it drives me crazy when that's overlooked. And you hear stories out there of certain companies that, you know, it gets back that their people are unhappy, you know, they're not treated that well, they're not put in a position to succeed. And you know, if you guys have figured that out, then that's a great thing to have going for you.
Yeah, I mean, we've been fortunate that, you know, every employee at the company, you know, I think is you know, they want to succeed. I think people want to be parts of teams that are winning. And, you know, when that happens, people learn. And you know, it's just it's a fun environment. I mean, it's also chaotic at times, right? Like any early stage company is. But you know, when I look back at my time at the Honest Company, I learned so much in a short period of time, and I think that's really what I want to create here too.
Yeah, definitely. So you guys have gotten a lot of great accolades over the last year or so as well. I think I saw something from Fast Company, which is not something I was familiar with before, but it sounds like they gave you a put you on the list for most innovative companies of 2020. Is that right?
Yeah. That was a really cool surprise there that we made that list with some other great companies that, you know, are really well known, like household name type companies. So I think it's exciting. It's exciting to see. And I think for us, it's kind of probably in any job. It's like the longer you stay there, the more opportunity you see, right? So, of course, it feels nice to get those accolades. I think it's a testament to the team that we have here more than anything. But it also just makes me want to move even faster and, like, take this opportunity won't last forever, right? So, like, it's kind of a pivotal moment in supply chain right now. So
Right. Yeah, I mean, everything's moving so quickly that, you know, if you're not ahead of the wave, you know, you could find yourself probably in a tough situation. And I'm sure it's hard to kind of predict all those trends. It's probably a mix of being proactive and some stuff you're not going to see. So sometimes you got to be a little reactive, but if you can be nimble and move quickly, then, you know, you can kind of keep the momentum going.
And I think that's where startups actually do have an advantage over incumbent companies, whether it's this industry or others. It's just, you know, I've worked at big companies. Think of how many meetings you need to go through even to release like a slight process change, right?
Yeah.
Or like send a memo or an email to the company. Like that's like minimum 5 levels of revision before you get.
Yeah.
So I think that's where when you have these like big moments of change, that's really hard to do. And
just
your timing, your planning horizons are different. Like I'm sure it, the company you're at or other big companies, they have 5-year plans to get stuff done. And in startup world, it's like, all right, how do I do that in 5 weeks? Let's do it.
Yeah. I think it's getting faster and faster on our end too. You know, the world just moves so fast now that like, yeah, of course we do long-term strategic planning, but it's almost like, what is that even worth anymore? You know, because the world moves so much more quickly than it ever did. Yeah. And you know, JLL, I think, is really great at keeping up with that kind of technology. I mean, we've got some great people in our Chicago office. We have JLL Spark, which is, you know, a firm that invests in technology companies and, you know, and feeds information to JLL on these trends to get ahead of things. So, yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's definitely still some, you know, slower processes of the large company, but in terms of, you know, staying ahead of technology, you know, if you have to do that faster and faster, no matter what size company you are these days, especially if you're in the kind of field that we're in, which is ultimately real estate and occupying space. It's, you know, it's going to be super interesting to see how this plays out post COVID. You know, I think we all know how hot industrial is and last mile distribution and 3PLs, like that's just going to keep just going crazy even post COVID. But
yeah,
you know, the office life is the big thing we're focused on now is what does that look like after we're through this to a point where we're very consistently back in the office at fairly normal density levels, you know? So I don't know if we know the answer quite yet, but, on the positive side, you know, the survey data tells us that people very much want to come back, you know, which is a good thing.
Yeah. I think there'll probably be some sort of hybrid, you know, and it's impossible to predict, but you know, there is something to just seeing your coworkers and, you know, going to lunch with someone or something like that, that you can't really replicate on Zoom. So, I think it'll come back in some capacity.
Yeah, and it's the collaboration piece we talked about before. It is much harder to collaborate on Zoom or whatever you're using, WebEx, Teams, whatever it may be, than sitting in a room and exchanging ideas. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing right now. You know, is that you can't do that right now to enough of an extent. And you know, I mean, to be clear, we're, you know, our offices, you know, Greater Philadelphia, aside from Center City, Philadelphia, which is under some stricter rules right now, but our offices are open and we're taking every precaution that we can to be super safe about it. And that collaboration is coming back in some of our offices, but of course it's like, you got a conference room, you can only put two people in it when before you could put 10 in, you know? So it's all these things you got to work around, but soon enough, we'll be back in full force. And, you know, I can't tell you how much I look forward to that day, you know? I mean,
are your dogs driving you crazy? You're ready to escape.
Guys. Yeah, they're going nuts. I mean, we got, you know, we got a almost a blizzard over this past weekend, and you know, these guys going in and out of the house, jumping through the snow and tracking stuff in the house, and they want to play with dad, and you know, I love them. They're wonderful, but it's the best time of their lives. But I'm ready to get back to the office and see how excited they are when daddy comes home from work, you know?
I think pets are going to be like majorly depressed when people start going back into the office.
I know. Well, maybe in the new flexible environment, we got to allow them in to more of an extent. I can just bring them with me, let them run wild in the office.
That can't go wrong if 100 people come into the office.
bring my 3 rescue pit bulls into the office? No.
That seems
everything's
like
fine. Well, listen, man, you know, this has been awesome, and I really appreciate your time, and I'm so excited to see what you guys are going to continue to do in the future with Flow Space. And you know, for anybody out there that wants to check it out, flow.space is a website. You can read all about what Ben's company does, and you know, there's really, I mean, it's got to be great for almost any size company to work with you guys and finding the right solution that's going to fit their needs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And thanks for the plug. And if you go to flow.space and just say, contact us, someone will get back to you immediately and talk about your business and anything we can do to help. with your fulfillment and getting your products to your customers. So yeah, thanks for the plug there, Tony.
Yeah, sure. And you're not restricted at all in terms of where you're doing this within the country, right? I mean, you're pretty much all over the place.
We have a presence in every metro area at this point.
Nice.
The company corporate headquarters in Los Angeles, but we have a facility in everywhere. So that's one of the advantages you get with us is just integrate to FlowSpace one time. And then based on your demand information, we can tell you exactly where you need to store your products. Right? And that's super helpful because that's how companies really save money and time when getting their products to their customers.
Yeah, that's great. And I meant to mention this too, because I had looked this up when I was doing some of the research for this podcast, but you guys have been giving assistance during COVID-19 as well. Offering some free storage and inbound transportation for companies. I don't want to speak for you that you're still doing that now, or if that was just kind of in the beginning when things were kind of hectic, but that's pretty awesome of you guys to have offered that.
Yeah, we did that initially when COVID first happened, and you know, helping some of our warehouse partners with some equipment that they needed to operate safely. I think just broadly speaking, COVID has such an impact on local businesses. And, you know, one of the things that we've coordinated is this thing called tip bombing. So like a bunch of employees will pull, you know, a couple bucks here and there, like $5. And then we'll go to a local restaurant and the person will write like a really big tip for the restaurant staff. Because I think a lot of these like local restaurants are really impacted because they don't have any people coming in for lunch anymore. So
yeah,
just various things that even, you know, while officially the company's done some of these bigger things that you've talked about, just on a kind of more grassroots approach to doing something.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I've been, you know, we've been doing takeout recently as much as we can, because we love these restaurants that are local and near and dear to our hearts. And every time we do, I tip as if we've eaten in the restaurant. You know, that's what I'm doing. So I'm doing like a 20% tip on takeout because, that's my little bit I'm doing to help in addition to, you know, some of the donations I've made. But, you know, you got to think for that particular industry, way more so than any industry, you know, restaurants, hospitality, travel have just gotten slammed by this.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other industries that haven't, or industries that have gotten bigger because of it, you know? But if we could focus on those that really need it, I think that's an awesome thing. And that's pretty cool. Your employees doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think hopefully it all comes back soon. But yeah, it's unfortunate what's happened with a lot of the local restaurants. It's a hard business to be in right now.
Definitely. Well, listen, man, I'm not going to take up any more of your time. I really appreciate it. We miss you back here in New Jersey. But I know you're living the good life out in Cali and you're growing this company into something really special. So all my best to you, the family, the FlowSpace family, and I'll definitely be keeping tabs on you, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Good to talk to you.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.